Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. My pops picked the place up for $1,500 back in 19.
What's up, Wisconsin? Adventure Man Joel Clayfish here with Wonder Woman Danielle Fairman. You're listening to Raised in Wisco from the Fishbowl in downtown Waukesha, just a couple blocks from where I was born and grew up. And I'll tell you what, man, the greatest thing about Wisconsin is the changing weather patterns and the fact that you can get out and hunt and fish every minute of every day in this state. Right when the hunting season ends, everybody gets a little bit depressed. Mm-hmm. But that's when the ice is just thick enough to get out on the hard water and start pulling those slabs through the water. Danielle Fairman's been filling in on Raised in Wisco the last couple of weeks because I've been out doing some hunting, shooting up hogs in Florida. Hello.
Not on the ice water.
Not on the hard water, that's for sure. Want to give a shout out to our Oconomowoc clan, the Kennedys, who are our loyal listeners of five out there. And I think we're actually up to seven listeners. So
we're like double that by now.
Thanks to the Kennedys. But
the OGs of the show.
I'm in a coyote tournament this weekend.
In a coyote tournament?
Yes.
That sounds fantastic.
Well, it's a little different. It's whichever person looks the most like a coyote.
Oh.
I'm kidding.
You could still try that out there. Yeah. Just wear orange. Wolf,
it reminds me of the Michael J. Fox movie from the 80s. The Wolfman, was it called? Or Teen Wolf. That's it, Teen Wolf.
I was like, don't look at me. I have no idea.
So Danielle carried the show last week, and I understand. I got to do a presentation on a red stag hunt for Safari Club International last mm-hmm. week. That's where I was while I wasn't here for the show. And we've talked about this before, but I have to say, man, if you get a chance, you know, Wisconsin's got awesome hunting. It really does.
It does.
Get a chance to travel to hunt, you really ought to try that, because as much as the hunt and the kill are cool and important, and eating some exotic meat from an animal you've killed somewhere else is fantastic, it is so cool to see other cultures. And the United States is very clearly the greatest country in the world, hands down, no doubt about it. Everything about it's the awesomest ever. But we are a young country. And if you go to some other country to hunt, well, first of all, realize that no matter what other country you go to, it's not going to be as great as America. I'm just saying that right off the bat, because you're not going to have the freedoms that you have in this country no matter where you go. But if you head to Europe to hunt, I hunted vampire deer in England. I hunted fallow deer in France. You get to experience a culture that's a lot older than it is here in the United States. And we had talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I mm-hmm. was able to hunt on King Louis XIV's estate with Madame de Montenau's castle on the estate. It was really an incredible experience, and it was fantastic. But, the late buck season's going on right now. Have you had a chance to sit out there, Danielle? Because it's been pretty mild weather.
Yeah, I have gotten out there, but of course, when I go out there, I don't see anything at all, but it's very rare that I get to go out there. What? I'm still working. I haven't stopped working. We're still working 40, 50 hours, and then just...
Yeah, well,
just late
season hunting is tough
mm-hmm.
because, you know,
after dark.
But I'm telling you what, right now, this kind of like third rut is going on a little bit.
Mm.
I think some of the does that have not been bred are still walking around, and they must be giving off some estrus, because I've seen a couple bucks chasing does across the road when I've been driving home.
Yeah.
So the problem with late season hunting is you're not going to have hardly any of the action that you have during the main rut or main
seasons. Oh, yeah, definitely not.
So then it's a matter of patience. You just have to sit there and hope that that one last buck's going to walk by, and that gets incredibly frustrating.
Well, at least you're not chattering your teeth because it's so cold. It's been so mild, so there's really nothing else to do besides hunting. You can't really go ice fishing right now. At least I can't, because I don't trust my spud bar yet.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, the guys who are finally out, I've got a friend who fishes the brookies and the Zeeferellons and the rainbows and Chinooks on Lake Michigan. And he's on Lake Michigan right now fishing.
Yeah, no.
That's like a no think. There is no fish that is worth this 230-pound man going through the ice on Lake Michigan while it's heaving up and down.
I mean, if I can see the people and I'll go out with them, I'll definitely go out. But It's more or less by myself situation right now.
Me. I'm one of those guys. Who...
But you also won't go noodling and I will. So
yeah, I'm not there's going that. Okay. Well, there's a difference between no. being an adventure man, hunting gators and hogs and all that stuff, and just plain lunacy. And when you stick your hand under a rock in the Fox River...
I was down in Illinois. Thank
you. Okay, fine. Well, fine. The Rock River, then. What? I mean, come on, Danielle. What if there's a snapping turtle under it?
What if there's not a snapping turtle?
You're not coming up with fingers if there's a snapping turtle under there instead of a big catfish.
Okay, so if you go across to Spain and you trust somebody to take you out hunting... that you never met before in your whole entire life.
And you end up eating paella? That's crazy.
And they end up eating you.
Oh, for God's sake. I mean, last I checked, most Spaniards aren't cannibals.
I don't know. I have that trust issue.
Dahmer's from Milwaukee, not Spain, Danielle. You know what? I'm pretty jacked because we have...
That took a south turn.
We have... super awesome guests today, and one of the
you know
areas...
what would help with that? Concealed carry.
Yeah.
What a good transition.
Well, yeah. Try getting concealed carry in another country.
Oh yeah, no.
It's not even possible. We have not only an expert on the Second Amendment, but somebody who understands firearms to a level that 99% of us do not. Matthew Tengis is here with us, gunsmith Matthew Tengis, and he brought along his daughter, Angie Tinsley, who we're very happy to have with us on the show. Matthew, I have to tell you, you want to talk about a man of mystery. You are a man of mystery. I just met you. I just want to describe this for the audience. The guy, you meet the guy, and he's got two full sleeves of tattoos, ancient Greek gods on the tattoos. Greek? They are Greek, right? Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's correct.
Second Amendment is tattooed on your arm, obviously something extremely important to you. And you're a gunsmith. And I think so often hunters don't realize the importance of making sure the firearm you are taking into the waters and woods of Wisconsin is, number one, safe.
Absolutely.
And functions correctly.
Absolutely.
So what was it about gunsmithing that... got to your heart and got to your mind to say, I'm going to become, you know, if you work at Subway, you're a sandwich artist. But if you are a gunsmith, you literally have to become an artist in the assembly and workings of firearms. And they're incredibly complicated from time to time. What got you into that in the first place?
Well, from a very young age, I had always been very into, like, taking apart things and putting them back together from my toys, my Transformers, Erector sets, stuff like that was really, really big in my childhood. Growing up, I came from a hunting family. My mom married my stepdad, who actually was retired as deputy chief of Waukesha Fire Departments. Okay. And he was an avid hunter and an avid fisherman. And he got me into a life, the hunting and fishing. And from there, I mean, I went to college for welding, metal fabrication, CNC, and hand machining.
Awesome. That's cool.
Ended up having getting hurt at work.
That's not cool.
Four major spinal surgeries. I couldn't do that anymore, obviously, because of the heavy work. I've watched a lot of TV, and at that time, Sons of Guns and American Guns were big on TV, and this is like 2010-ish,
sure,
2011. And I just, one day it just clicked and I was like, I can do that. And I did the research, went back to school for the gun side of it because I knew the machining, the welding, the metals. I knew all that
side
of it.
You had a perfect background that lent itself
absolutely
to you understanding the function of different firearms.
Well, it wasn't really the function. It was more the metallurgy and the machining and how detailed the work actually is. Because a lot of people use machines and stuff like that to do stuff, whereas I use files.
Okay.
You know, guns, and I say this, if I've said it once, I've said it probably 1,000 times to people, and probably even more than that. Guns work within hundreds of thousandths of an inch, which is the thickness of a human hair. If I take off too much material on something, I can't put that material back. I have to recast it, and I have to remake it, and I have to redo it. Or I have to order another part that's cast, and I have to file it down to fit properly.
Essentially, but when we talk filing, you're talking minuscule perfection style filing.
Absolutely. Because one stroke at a time.
One thing that I hear from people a lot, or I hear the word, is tolerances.
Absolutely.
Of firearms. And some firearm manufacturers are, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know a lot about this. Some have tighter tolerances and some Absolutely. Have looser tolerances.
Absolutely.
You shoot a Mossberg shotgun, you definitely notice that there's much more play in it than Absolutely. if you shoot a Now, Beretta, for example, mm-hmm. or a different type of shotgun. So how important are the manufacturer's tolerances to what you're doing?
Extremely crucial. Extremely crucial because, like I said, if I go outside of tolerance one way or the other, then the part won't function inside the firearm. And then I have to get a new part and I have to make it work.
So are there manufactured brands of firearms that you find a lot easier to work with because they give a little leeway in the
No.
No, they're all picky SOBs.
Well, for the most part, like, okay, so I've manufactured my own firearms before. I actually manufactured my own 1911 from the casting of the frame to the machining to the hand fitting and test firing. That gun is probably one of the tightest and best shooting 1911s I've ever owned, and I've owned plenty of Kimbers. Angie owns a Kimber, which she talks excessively about and how much she loves. But my gun, my 1911, I will take it over any gun on the market right now, and I guarantee I'll shoot it better than any other firearm that's manufactured today.
Wow.
And that's a firearm that you essentially built from the ground up.
Absolutely.
Huh. That's impressive
that's
to me.
That's very impressive. That's something to say.
Danielle, do you have, how many guns do you have, Danielle?
I feel like a pathetic little girl when I say this. I have two. Two.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It's better than one.
You've got,
but I have two. Two shotguns.
You have 200% more guns than the person who has zero.
Oh, this is true. Look at me, overachiever over here.
And I'm not great at math, so I don't even know if that's correct. But so you have a shotgun?
Yeah, I have my Browning Maxxis and my Mossberg 500.
Okay. Well, okay.
That was my first gun. A little pump action.
Yeah.
Pump action.
The mm-hmm. first gun I ever had in my life was a Mossberg 500. And I'm telling you, when you waterfowl hunt with a pump action gun, I think you do better than when you have a semi-auto. Because when you have a semi-auto, it's blam, blam, blam.
Uh-huh.
The birds are coming and you've like, got your three happening? Shots out of the barrel uh-huh. in 1.5 seconds. And you're looking at all your buddies. Now I'm fat and old, so I get up out of the blind less, so I still take my time. We're talking gunsmithing, and if you have your questions, give us a call. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco with Adventure Man Joel Clayfish and Wonder Woman Danielle. Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm Adventure Man Joel Clayfish with Wonder Woman Danielle Fairman. Danielle,
yes.
You are such a weirdo.
With weirdo Danielle.
Disappeared right the second that the ad came on. She took off and left the studio and was running outside. You are such.
Well, I had a purpose.
She came back in here. I can't even make this stuff up. She's got this giant wad of pinkish purple crap on her finger.
Red. Grease.
It was kind of pinkish colored. And I said, what is that? She said, it's a wad of grease. Her mic stand was squeaking. So she's an operating engineer. And in addition to a hunter. And so she's messing around with the mics. Does it still squeak?
Oh. I gotta get more. Well, now you know what I'm doing in the next one. I didn't think that was gonna be that big of an area. But okay, I had to correct myself now too, because I also have a grease gun. I'm gonna use that one because it's called a grease gun.
All right. Well, listen.
I'll take all the things I can get right
if
now.
If we get in trouble because there's grease all over the studio,
hey.
Kroot, it's because Danielle brought the grease gun
grease
into the studio.
Grease your stuff.
So grease. What would that be classified as?
As a
handgun, long gun,
be,
SBR, what?
It's, I don't know where an SBR, gun? But I'll go with that one.
I think
what's an
SBR?
Is
short barrel rifle.
Oh, well, I have a flimsy tip.
Is that registered with the ATF?
I'll call it. It's a mechanical grease gun because I have a button that goes.
Again, is that registered with the ATF?
Yeah, dude. Duh.
Serial number?
867-5309.
Kelvin, I see you laughing in there, Kelvin. Kelvin's our producer on the show, and he does a fantastic job. And so I literally ask the first question I ever ask him, hey, Kelvin, is this show cool? Do you like it? Do you think you might get into hunting? Kelvin's like, no.
That Kelvin. Is not how that happened.
Yeah, he was a straight no.
No, the question was not if I thought the show was cool or if I liked it. Because I think this show is awesome.
Kelvin thinks the show's cool because I can see him when he's in there and he's laughing.
I know. He smiles.
Angie Tinsley is here. Angie is the daughter of Matthew.
That one doesn't squeak.
Matthew Tengis, who is our gunsmith, who's with us today. And we learned a little bit before we went to the break about how he got into gunsmithing. And what's it like living with a dad who works on firearms all the time? Are you a hunter? Did his family's penchant for hunting and love for hunting, was that something that you felt growing up and something that influenced you to become a hunter yourself? And what kind of hunter are you?
Yeah, it's definitely something that influenced me throughout my life. Having, sorry, I'm trying to get the mic correct.
Yeah, get right on that mic. Hey, Danielle.
Yes.
Matthew and Angie's mic, they just swung between them. It did not squeak. So
I already mentioned that because I fixed that one last week.
Okay. Well, that's probably true. I'm sorry, Angie. I interrupted. I'm so thrown off today by Danielle's greasing of everything that. So you grew up in a hunting family. Did you feel like that was kind of just the course you were supposed to take? And, you know, I don't know your age specifically, but the fastest growing group of new hunters is women. So you were kind of growing up at a time when women were just starting to become hunters. And would you say it was family influence that got you into the sport?
I kind of did it myself more so. It was definitely easier having a father that was a gunsmith. Guns just came natural to me, and I kind of just picked it up by myself, to be honest. When I was 18, it was something that I wanted to do just to be different, because not a lot of people that are, well, I shouldn't say not a lot of people, because there is a lot of hunters in Wisconsin, but not a lot of women hunted.
Right.
So I actually found a bow at a garage sale, and I was like, that's how I'm going to be different.
Okay.
Nobody that I know is an archery hunter. So I bought the bow.
No woman you knew, or no people you knew?
No person that I knew was an archery hunter.
Well, your dad's a gunsmith. He's not an archery smith. So yeah, that makes sense.
I always joke with him that he's a gunsmith, that he's not a marksman.
Oh, ouch.
I feel like that's offensive.
Wow.
I let you win every Father's Day.
Okay. All right. Well, the truth comes. Let me tell you what. Raised in Wisco is a truth serum of sorts, so I just hope you guys leave friendly. That's all I have to say, because blood's thicker than water, that's for sure. So at the time that you became interested in hunting at the beginning, you're going into something that's not, you know, certainly not dominated by women. And what we've learned from a lot of women who are guests on this show, the toughest part for them is to find a mentor who's a mentor who's actually interested in teaching you, you know, about the sport, about becoming a hunter. And that can be tricky. And you were saying that for you, it was kind of self-taught, or that was something you just kind of got into. And what did you hunt first?
Whitetail.
Okay. So then, you got proficient with a bow and hit the woods.
I did. My first year out, I actually shot my first buck with my archery tag.
Wow.
Yep. And it was a 6-pointer. And I still am the most proud with that than I have been with shooting anything. And I've shot bigger bucks. It was just a matter of trial and error, to be honest. I watched a lot of videos. I hit my forearm multiple times with my string. And it was just kind of like, I didn't have the, like, top-of-the-line things either. I had an old youth bow it happened to be a youth bowl, but I felt like it fit me fine. And then my archery guy, I call him my dealer, he's out in Lake Geneva, he really helped me. And he kind of showed me the ropes, and I'm very, very thankful for that.
Isn't that an awesome story, though? Because mm-hmm. I tell people, everything you put an arrow through or a bullet through is a trophy. And I get as much excitement about the trophy of that food on the table as I do whatever antlers. Because I'll tell you, you can boil the antlers or pressure cook them as long as you want. They never get tender. That's the lesson I live by. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco. Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm Adventure Man Joel Clayfish.
And I am Wonder Woman Danielle. Weird Danielle.
Weird woman.
Wonder Woman.
Danielle, give him the number.
Call us at 844-967-2789. You can find us on Facebook at WAUK Radio. You can see our beautiful faces online right now. We go live every week. Or afterwards, why are you laughing at that? You got a beautiful face. Don't worry.
He's
You're getting comfy. Or you can find us on Spotify, Pandora, or Apple right after the show. Our podcast goes up.
And don't forget, this show airs at 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday mornings. And there's some exciting news that's going to be coming.
I'm so excited.
As Civic Media Group expands throughout the state. I'm so excited
about
it.
Are we able to tell people yet, or are we still holding off?
Well, we're going to hold off on telling people the specifics. Just that it's going to get very exciting throughout the state of Wisconsin, because Raised in Wisco is going to start airing on different stations throughout the state, and I am excited to expose the Cheddarland to the Adventure Man and Wonder Woman.
We definitely need shirts or capes.
I think we do. I think we need capes.
I got a guy.
We can get tattoos too. Do
Matthew
the whole shebang.
Tengis is with us, and he is. Why don't you give yourself a plug here? What's the name of your gunsmithing service, Matthew?
Second Amendment Gunsmithing LLC.
Well, that's fantastic. And he's got his daughter with us today, Angie Tinsley, who just gave us a little insight into how she got into hunting. And again, another great woman success story in the hunting world. We love the fastest growing group of new hunters, and that is women aged 18 to 35. And we're so excited about that, because I think at the end of the day, women are better shots than men.
I just got really sad.
Why?
Because you said 18 to 35.
Is the fastest growing group of new hunters.
What happens? Well, I'm not growing. I'm almost 35. You just reminded me. I'm almost 35.
Yeah, but you started hunting a long time ago.
I know, but it's very sensitive right now.
Wow. I've never thought of you as sensitive on the radio, Danielle, because I think I certainly will say that you make me blush more than the other way around.
You're welcome.
Matthew, what firearm do you get the most to deal with and fix?
It's completely across the board, honestly.
What about with hunters?
Usually it's the rifles, the semi-automatics people have the most issues with. Remington, like the older Remington semi-autos are really, really, there's issues with them because they're getting old. They're getting to be 60, 70 years old now.
Oh, holy geez. Cow.
So
is that lack of taking care of it?
No, not necessarily lack of taking care of it. It's just more along the lines that parts only last so long with use. You know,
wear them out. I needed a new extractor.
Absolutely.
On my shotgun, just because of how much it's been shot on the waterfowl.
That's something that I can absolutely do. You know, and it's not something that a lot of people have the ability to do. And then on top of it, finding the parts and looking in the right places, number one. And number two, a lot of companies won't even send you parts if you don't have your federal firearms license.
Really?
Absolutely. You can call them up, but 9 out of 10 of them won't even talk to you if you don't have your federal firearms license.
Wow.
So you are also an FFL dealer.
Absolutely, I am. I'm a dealer. I actually have my manufacturing license, so I can actually manufacture firearms. I can manufacture ammunition, do a full line of gunsmithing and sales.
Holy cow. So Matthew is definitely a good guy to know. And I think I'm not joking about this. I think a lot of people who have fire, I've got probably 30, 40 plus firearms.
That's it.
Well, I
knew that would be your answer, but
just kidding.
I have dozens of firearms, and I think a lot of people, when something goes wrong with a firearm, whether it be a handgun, a shotgun, or a rifle, I think it gets put in the safe and just left there.
Absolutely.
And I think they move on to other guns very often instead of getting that gun fixed. Do you see that? And
a lot.
Do you see the tragedy in that?
Yeah, a lot. And the thing is that when it comes down to it, the people that do that, they would rather just go out and buy a new gun versus spending the money to repair it. Because why would you spend $200 or $300, maybe $400 to repair a gun when you can just buy a new one for $500 or $600?
Well, aww. Is there any truth to the fact that there's quality in those older guns and fixing
absolutely.
Them really makes sense?
Absolutely.
Because that's how I look at
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I personally own older firearms that are from the 1903, 1904, all the way to 1945 or 46, and they're definitely a different type of manufacturing, because these guns, one gunsmith sat down and manufactured this firearm from a brick of steel.
Sure.
And
wow.
That's different than now, manufacturing now, where a machine makes the gun and they're
and with there's it. A lot of synthetic parts.
Absolutely.
In them now.
Absolutely. And now there's, I respect firearms like that. That's why I own them and I love them so much. And that's why I love the 1911 so much, because it was designed in a day and age that planned obsolescence wasn't there.
Sure.
It was designed to last a lifetime and multiple lifetimes. And that's why I love that gun so much. And older guns, a lot of people don't like working on them. They just don't think that they want to take the time or spend the money on doing it. When I tell them, I tell people, it's worth it, because the firearm that you're going to go out and buy is going to be nowhere near the quality of the firearm that you have in your hands right now. So
let me talk to you just for a second. Well, first, I'm going to ask a question, because this is always curious to me. And I've got a 22 Magnum handgun, Tracker.
Taurus
Tracker. Mm-hmm. And I really do love the handgun. I mean, it's an accuracy gun. It's for hunting small game. Mm-hmm. And every fourth, fifth, maybe sixth round dimples the cartridge, and that's a rimfire cartridge, and there dimples it, and it doesn't shoot. Is that something that just happens? Or is that something that should be looked at by a gunsmith?
It should absolutely be looked at, because that could have something to do with your firing pin.
Okay.
Your firing pin could have, on the backside where your hammer hits your firing pin, it could have mushroomed a little bit. So when because everything works within tolerances, like we were talking about, a couple hundredths of an inch could make a world of difference.
So that is something that's out of the norm and should be looked at.
I mean, with use, it's something that's very normal, but it absolutely should be looked at without a shadow of a doubt. Because the biggest thing is that misfires are one of the biggest problems. And then what you also have what are called squib loads. Squib loads are when you pull the trigger and the powder doesn't fully ignite, or you don't have enough powder in there, and it pushes the bullet halfway down the barrel and you don't even realize it. And then you go to pull the trigger again and your gun blows up on you.
What?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of an incident like that.
That cannot be said. Oh, I have. I mean, that's something you've got to be very, and that, is that an issue you see more in hand loading or in manufactured rounds?
I personally have had a lot more issues with it, because I'm a reloader and I reload a lot. I see a lot of issues with it, but I know what to do in a situation like that, whereas a lot of people don't. They don't think twice about it, and then what they do is they just go and pull it. They empty the shell out, that empty shell that doesn't have a bullet in, and they put another round on the barrel.
Mm. Yeah.
And then next thing happens is the gun blows up.
And it is people need to be incredibly cognizant of safety every time.
Absolutely.
That kind of leads me to the conversation I want to have with you about the difference in perceptions of firearms. Now, you've got Second Amendment tattooed on your arm. You feel very strongly about Second Amendment, obviously. I have found that, and there are philosophical differences in gun ownership and gun possession in different countries and in the United States among people. Mm-hmm. And I think that very often when a firearm is seen as something to harm another human being, it creates, there's a monster in a metaphoric monster that's created. And I think some of the people, some folks who have that perception have never had the ability to be shown the value of a firearm in bringing organic food from the field to the table, doing a sporting clays event for the challenge and the entertainment value of it. How do we bridge that chasm in the United States? I honestly had 22 people shoot a firearm with me who had never fired around before in their life. And of those people, I would say more than half of them have actually gone back to it because they saw a gun for the first time in a different light. What is the way that we show society of the benefits of safe handling and use of a firearm versus seeing a firearm as something that causes and perpetuates evil or bad or violence?
So I'm going to kind of take a couple steps back with that when you asked me that. When COVID first hit, I was working at a gun shop in Milwaukee, and we didn't even know what hit us. Realistically, it was just a small gun shop, and when it hit us so hard that within 2 weeks we were out of guns, literally out of guns.
What do you mean it hit you in the way that people were purchasing?
People were purchasing, and these are people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s that have never owned a firearm before. And they come to us, and they say, why do I need a gun? And my biggest thing, tell people, I've told probably 10,000 people, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Mm-hmm. And guns are inanimate objects that are a tool, just like a screwdriver, just like a hammer, just like a saw, just like a kitchen knife. And every single one of those tools can do the exact same thing a gun can. It can kill somebody. It all depends on the person that's behind it that determines whether that tool is used for good, evil, or anything else.
So how do we show folks, I mean, how do we change the debate about firearm ownership so that those who are philosophically dead set against it may be open to the possibility that the firearm is a tool to be used for good?
Most people that are dead set on it, you're not going to change your mind. They're one of those. There's some people you just can't. They just look at it like that, you know. And it's sad that people look at it like that sometimes. But sometimes it's just like, if I can't convince you any other way, and you're not willing to give it a shot, then what leg do you have to stand on?
I think we're in a very special moment right now when we talk about firearms. I think we're at this pinnacle moment where philosophically from the right and the left, we've kind of come full circle. And I think that gap will be bridged by the food element of it. I think as we see a growing concern to harvest and eat organic meat and free range meat, because, you know, fortunately, thank goodness, we are kind of moved away from the whole vegan movement. That's kind of dead and gone now. We've moved back into proteins being a very important part of a healthy diet. And I think as that continues, that is outdoors folks, adventure folks, opportunity to show those who may not have considered harvesting their own game that this is the time to try it. I think we're in an age right now where that conversion is happening. I think you're seeing very many people who had never considered hunting for their own meat trying it for the first time, purchasing a firearm, purchasing, let's say, a shotgun for the first time. Let's say someone purchases a shotgun for home security. Then when they realize that it's not something they're going to be digging out from under their bed every 3 days, what else can I do to utilize this to maybe put a goose on the table or a duck or a turkey? And I think this is our chance for a renaissance and a revolution of the hunting industry based on bringing organic food from the field to the table.
And it tastes different too.
Oh, it tasted absolutely wonderful.
It tastes way different. It tastes way, way different than anything you could possibly ever buy.
There's no question, but I think it tastes better. And I think that's one of the things that's so fun and so enjoyable is taking wild game. I mean, I have people who would swear up one side and down the other they never even try wild game.
Oh, yeah, I had that too. My whole family.
Yeah. And they happened to them when you cooked it the right way?
They said, what am I eating today, Danielle?
Yeah.
My house is called the meat locker because it's cold and there's always dead animals.
I love it. Well, last week I put in the sous vide machine goose breast for 36 hours and I served it. And someone said, this is the best tenderloin filet I ever ate.
I believe it.
Great, because you're eating sky carp. We'll be right back.
It sits above the mantle.
We're back on Raised in Wisco. We were having so much fun over the commercial break, we almost didn't get back in time. Calvin, you scared me there for a minute. All of a sudden, I heard the
music song, coming though. Back in. Granddaddy's gone.
Oh, that's not bad, sing? Calvin.
He did
Calvin,
so good
we'll
today.
Calvin, we'll make a hunter out of you yet. You just watch, buddy.
Calvin, do you shoot guns? Have you shot a gun?
I have shot a gun. I actually did the youth duck hunt when I was like 12.
Did you like it though?
I didn't like the hunting part. I liked the shooting part. We shot trap. Leading up to the.
I shot but didn't hit anything.
No. I shot a goose. It was not.
You did?
Yes, I did. I wasn't. I don't know. It scared me a little.
It did?
Yeah.
The actual fact that the goose fell out of the sky or the fact that you were shooting a gun to do it?
Just the killing it part.
Yeah. No, you know what? I talk about this a lot. If you don't have respect for every animal you kill, then you shouldn't be out there hunting. Part of I have every single time I harvest an animal, I have remorse in my heart about it. There's no question about it. But that's part of the circle of life and understanding that that is a gift God's put down on this earth for us to take and put on our table. And we have to sustain ourselves. And frankly, I think it's a responsibility every single person who eats meat should undergo. And that is understanding where that meat is actually coming from. Meat does not come from a cellophane package in the grocery store.
No. Every time I harvest, I go up to it, I say thank you, and I say a quick prayer, and then I'm like, let's eat.
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. When you harvest something, you go through the emotions of the entire thing. You go through the fear and excitement of because let's be honest, shooting a gun is it's an intimidating, violence not the right word, but there's a boom, there's a shaking, there's a strong reactive sense when it happens, which should be understood by the person who's doing it beforehand. And, you know, the harvesting of an animal that's a grave event. And putting that on the table and appreciating where that meat actually came from, I think is incredibly valuable.
It is.
And we went into the break talking about how those folks who want to eat organically and are out, you know, harvesting fair chase animals to put on the table, I think it's just a real step forward in the progress of people understanding the importance and getting back to our roots of harvesting what we eat. And that, along with foraging, is becoming much more popular. And we learned something else over the break. Gunsmith Matthew is also a culinary artist. So
artist of many kinds.
I want to bug you for a minute and ask, what is your favorite thing to cook? If you were in culinary school, some guys in culinary school are sauce guys?
My favorite thing, I actually love, one of my favorite recipes is chicken cordon bleu. I absolutely love making it, and I use a cast iron pan, and I make my own breading, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, see, that sounds fantastic.
And I use Lorraine Swiss, really high-end Lorraine Swiss, with some boar's head ham sliced really, really thin. Yeah.
Calm down, Joe. Calm down. Right.
Food is my favorite dish.
He's like, talk dirty to me.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, food is my favorite dish. Although I do say this in a somewhat joking manner, but not really, I'm not a chicken fan.
Chicken is overrated now.
I just don't. I want something with flavor. Mm-hmm. Everyone says, well, chicken takes on the flavor of whatever you put it with.
Not always.
So we want to, can we get like a little bit personal about me? Surprise, surprise. Surprise.
I'm a little nervous as to whether I should say yes, Danielle.
Okay, so we're starting.
But you're gonna say it anyway, so just go
this
ahead.
This is true. Everybody listen up.
Kelvin's still laughing. Kelvin, I don't know that I've seen you laugh as much as this show. Kelvin, are you going to be all right in there?
I think I'll make it.
I'm an open book, everybody. So I've been having a lot of tummy issues, meaning I fart a lot.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
that is personal.
It happens. So I've been going to the doctor, and the doctor told me to stop eating red meat and stop eating vegetables. So when she told me that months ago, I stopped buying meat from the store because it was just quick and convenient. And I forget to take stuff out of the freezer to thaw it so I can have it for dinner, right? So I would just go to the store and buy a steak. I love steak. I love steak. And every time I would just get nauseous and sick and, you know.
And gassy.
Just, yeah. And then I started eating, regularly taking venison out or whatever game I had in the freezer. And my stomach issues have not been so drastic. But when she said stop eating red meat, I never once thought to stop eating store-bought meat.
Huh.
And that's what kind of looks perfect about hunting. I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
So you're saying literally when you eat organic venison or when you eat meat that you harvest from the field, it bothers your stomach substantially less.
Much less. Like it's still whatever I eat now, I'm just getting nauseous. But and no, it's not because I'm pregnant or anything.
that seems like more like additives and preservatives than anything.
Well, I can't have vegetables. I can't have gluten. I'm okay with gluten, but no vegetables, no dairy.
Did they test you for celiac?
Yeah. So only thing that's wrong with me is I have low vitamin D.
Okay.
Everyone else says
that's not all that uncommon.
Yeah.
Not right now. Not right now.
Yeah.
I take 5,000. I use a vitamin D every day.
Yeah, I do. I do now.
5,000.
But yeah,
that's like
other than that,
3,000 more than 1,000.
Oh, yeah. Are you
math
sure about
is
this?
Horrible.
I was going to say, that doesn't
sure
add up right.
No.
You know,
yeah,
right?
He's still on days confused by your cordon bleu.
I was going to say, though, if chicken really isn't your thing, I have a great recipe for ribs.
Oh, ribs are my thing. And I'll tell you
I
what
can't
was.
Do ribs.
You know what's fantastic?
Oh, my goodness.
You know what's fantastic is bear ribs, black bear ribs.
Really?
Oh my gosh, they're so delicious! Yes,
I mean, do they have enough fat in them to make them, or are they really lean?
I tell you what I do. When I have ribs, I baste them. When they're on the Traeger, I baste them all with mayonnaise.
Well, that's why you got a Traeger.
Mayonnaise?
You got a Traeger,
and you got a Traeger. That there's a lot of forgiveness in that wood pellet grill.
I don't use
those. Oh, I love
it
the Traeger.
The greatest thing known to woman.
The Traeger awesome. Grill
Traeger.
Is fantastic. Angie, what do you like to eat? So you said you hunt deer. Do you hunt any other species? Or is it pretty much deer? Get that mic right over to you there.
So I primarily hunt whitetail. That's just my joy.
That's your passion.
Just because there's a lot that goes into it that people don't know. It's not just climbing
up into
sand and pulling the trigger.
Killing a whitetail with a bow is one of the hardest things you will ever do.
Right. So we start setting up the property, I would say, around like June every year, May, June, just for the archery hunt.
Sure.
It's crazy. It's not a matter of if you're going to see anything on the property. It's a matter of when you're going to see it and how many you're going to see.
Wow.
Because it's crazy.
That's
for
awesome.
Gun. But
I would not say where it is or you're going to have a bunch of calls. Look,
we're out of time.
Before we go, we need Matthew to tell where they can get a hold of him.
Yes.
20 seconds. Go, Danielle.
So for Second Amendment, number is 414-588-6137.
And I'm also on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Second Amendment Gunsmithing.
Yeah, and you can find it all on my Instagram and Facebook page.
And we're going to have him back.
Bye. Goodbye.